Today with me in the CFRU studio is Seth Tabachman. Seth is a radical political comic book artist. He is one of the founding editors of World War III Illustrated, which is a semi-annual political comics magazine that has been in publication since 1980. He is an author and illustrator of three collections and an educator. He has shown his work in street and galleries across the globe, including Exit Art, the Museum of Modern Art, and the New Museum of Contemporary Art. Welcome to Starkraven Radio, Seth.
Okay, pleased to be here.
Can you talk about your work? Which one is your latest book?
Most recent published book is Disaster and Resistance, which came out last summer. And it's a collection of short pieces on different political situations around the world that have taken place within the last decade. So it's sort of my book about the beginning of the 21st century. In fact, I called it Comics and Landscapes for the 21st Century because I kind of feel like the pieces together form a kind of landscape. That was my hope. And it deals with everything from Israel-Palestine conflict to global warming to the anti-globalization movement to women's struggles in Nigeria. And to New Orleans and flood New Orleans and reconstruction New Orleans. So it covers a lot of ground. It's almost like a travelogue because most of them are pieces that were the result of me going somewhere and, you know, studying a situation and getting sketches and, you know, writing a comic strip based on that. It also deals a lot with the U.S. war in Iraq and Afghanistan and September 11th. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of my book of the last decade. And the other book that is actually went to press more recently, but it's a much older book, is called You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive. I can say that on your radio?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say that on radio in New York. You don't have to fuck people over
as long
to survive.
As it's appropriate context.
Right. And it's a book I actually came out with in around 1989, yeah, and it's in its third printing.
Right.
And it's actually some of my more well-known work. It's a lot of stencils and a lot of sort of political graffiti sort of work. So those two books are the most recent books.
I'm sure you get this question a lot, but it helps bring forth ideas that still need to be out there and understood. What do you see as the relationship between politics and art?
I feel that human beings have always done art that documented and related to and explained the meaning of their activities. Like, if you look at the cave paintings that were found in Europe, they depict people hunting. And they depict people hunting quite beautifully because that was the activity of the community, and the activity of the community is portrayed in the work. And that was a vital activity of that community. So I think if our community is in political struggle, then there's going to be an art that reflects that. And to me, that's the relationship between art and politics. There is this notion that art can be used to politically educate people. I think sometimes it can. I think some people are not going to care what you do. They're not going to listen to you, and some people don't really need to be educated. Mm-hmm. And there's a wide variety of responses. But I don't see it as, you know, so much a tool as a natural human response to a situation. That, I mean, you know... And it's funny how that question is always asked, you know, what's the relationship of art to politics? You know, can art be political? And I'm kind of trying to imagine, do people think that if they're political, they live in a world without art, that there would be no art that covered their experience because these are these separate areas. Mm-hmm. I think that this is actually an alienated question, that we've created these two sections of human activity and we think that they're exclusive of each other. It's sort of like, you know, people say, well, art has nothing to do with science or philosophy or mathematics. Of course, it has to do with all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, human beings are whole creatures, you know. They're not, you know, that fragmenting it that way is, I think, problematic to me. You know, I think good art has a political context of some sort.
What made you decide to outline various social and political struggles in your long-standing, illustrious artwork?
Okay.
Which tends to focus on, I noticed, the struggles against social and political disease versus the results of injustice, like the violence, mm-hmm. suffering, despair, and fear
yeah.
that injustice inflicts upon the masses.
Well, very early, I'll answer the second question first.
Okay.
It's on the top of my mind. You know, very early on in the work we were doing in our magazine, World War III Illustrated, you know, we found that, you know, when we outlined a situation, it could be very depressing to people to say, well, you know, Reagan wants to put these MX missiles in Europe and it makes it more likely that there will be a nuclear war. And, you know, that was very depressing. And that what we felt people needed was to see that someone was doing something about it. I think that a lot of people are depoliticized by their pessimism. So that, to me, recording activity, political activity, social struggle activity was as important or sometimes more important than the issues, which people might actually be well informed about. But there's a notion that you can't do anything about it, that it doesn't matter, that because you can't do anything about it. So I felt like once you go the next step and you say, well, this is what people do about this, it changes the discussion completely. That rather than just saying, well, here's this terrible problem and isn't it sad?
Yeah, and people get paralyzed.
They get paralyzed, and they also, I think to some people it's very challenging when you say, oh, someone's actually doing something about this and it's pretty good and you can support it.
It's true.
And all of a sudden that person's on the spot. It's like, well, then they have to decide what to do about it. Whereas if you just say, wow, isn't it terrible what's happening to the environment? It's really awful, you know, those poor polar bears, and, you know, anyone can say that. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't take a position on anything to say that global warming is bad. Well, I don't know if you have them here, but in the U.S. we have these people who say there is no such thing as global warming.
Yeah, there's like thinking everywhere.
But lots of people will say global warming is bad, but if you say, well, what are we going to do about it? That's a whole other department, you know? And the other aspect of why I do that is because the way I get information as an artist journalist is from activists. Mm-hmm. So if I go to the Negev Desert to talk to the Bedouin, I go there with someone who's organizing Bedouin. That's who takes me there. And they're going to want their activism in the comic strip, you can be sure.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the perspective from which I get it. And I don't mind being partisan, because I think everyone is.
Yeah.
And I think there's, I think that, you know, I think I can be fair and balanced too.
You have a lot of personal integrity. In your artwork, you don't compromise your principles. For example, let's say for money, you don't soften or take out the integrity of the messages or of the storylines that are expressed in your work, which is all key and enormously helpful in the struggle against global repression and fighting back effectively. Have you gotten in any trouble for this? With the state or with others?
For the artwork per se. as opposed to gotten in trouble through other activity.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it limits my options as far as publication. And I'm not living in a nation state where they normally, you know, drag people away for what they write and draw. You know, I'm not living in the occupied territories or, you know, so I'm not experiencing that. But what I have had to deal with over the years is that if I don't want to express myself within certain parameters, if I want to go beyond that, that's going to cut down my commercial possibilities. There are publications that won't want to take my work. There are publishing companies that won't be interested in putting out my books. I tend to work with small publishers, or just I've had a self-published magazine called World War III Illustrated since 1979, because there was no place back then to put the type of work we were doing. We had to self-publish it. So I would say that limits me. There was a period in my life when I worked at the New York Times, and it was very conflicted period. I mean, I was very glad to be, you know, getting work and having it in a fairly prestigious place, but I found a lot of the work, you know, they would ask me to make changes that weren't acceptable, and eventually I wasn't working with them.
Mm-hmm. So you're able to sustain your livelihood through your artwork?
Rather narrowly.
Mm-hmm. Well, are there any other social and political struggles that you're working on conveying in your work, or you'd like to convey?
Well, right now I'm working on a book about the what I guess is being called the financial crisis or the housing crisis in the United States. I'm working on a book about the subprime mortgage crash. It's called Understanding the Crash, and it deals, you know, with the forces behind that, and both in terms of, you know, the inflated real estate market, and the very strange games that were played with credit over the last 10 years in the United States, and about the deregulation of finance in the United States, where they got rid of all of the regulations that were put in during the New Deal. And then it also deals with some of the activism that's gone on around that. For instance, people in Florida have been moving people into foreclosed houses that were being kept empty. So that's what I'm working on now. I'm finishing up work on that. And of course, I'm working here in Guelph with a student organization on a mural that's here in the hallway.
Yeah, Critical Knowledge Collective.
Critical Knowledge.
Is that something that you do a lot, or you've done a lot?
Doing murals with groups?
With
I've done some of that. I'd like to do more. It's not an area that, it seems like every few years I wind up doing a mural somewhere, but it's not, I certainly wouldn't call myself any type of expert on that. It's really not something I'm that developed on, but it's exciting. It's interesting. I like doing it. I'd love to do another one like this.
What do you like about the experience?
It's just been a lot of fun working with all these people and incorporating their ideas into a mural. You know, just a very nice feeling.
Can you talk a bit about people whose work has had a huge effect on you? And is there a particular artwork that really is inspiring for you?
Oh, yeah, tons. People whose work have had huge effect on me. Well, okay, first of all, African traditional art is just amazing. I love looking at that. And although you might not see it in my work, it inspires a lot of things, particularly the types of anatomical distortions people do in some of the wood sculpture. And then there's Goya, you know, great satirist and realist artist, you know, 18th century artist in Europe and Spain. And then there are, you know, my more comic book related influences, like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, who I grew up reading their work, you know. Okay. Fantastic Four and Spider-Man.
Okay.
You know, and what I really learned from those artists is not their content, which obviously I've moved past in life.
Right.
You know, but some of their formal mastery in terms of both Kirby and Ditko have a kind of reduction of the human figure that allows them to kind of have this bent old puppet that they can put in any position in any drawing, so they can produce whatever scenes they have to produce very quickly without having to go to any type of direct reference. And so that's an incredible skill to have, you know. So I learned from that. And then I learned a lot from some of my contemporaries, people like Sabrina Jones, Peter Cooper, Eric Drucker. I've worked with people I think are absolutely great, you know. We had this collective called World War III Illustrated where we all developed our work together.
Is that still? And
yes, it's still going on. We'll be out with a new issue in February. And, you know, a lot of great people developed in that, and there are always new people coming in who I learned something from. An artist who I find very inspiring, a young artist I find very inspiring, is Kate Evans, who put out a book called Copse, that is COPSE, the cartoon book of tree protesting, which is British self-published book about people who tried to prevent the building of a highway system through England that would destroy a lot of, you know, traditional communities and destroy a lot of forest, and you know, who used sort of earth first tactics, sitting in trees and, you know, blockading roads, etc. But what was really amazing was that she did this book sort of documenting everything that had happened in cartoon form. It was very funny. It was very kind of had a type of humor. She had a way of making fun of people that is on the one hand very typically English, but also kind of there was something friendly about it. Like, you know, that you couldn't say these things about someone who you weren't friends with, you know? And it just had this great feeling of, you could tell that she was there for everything she drew, that she knew these people and she participated in this, and then she produced the book. And so I feel Kate Evans is a real inspiration to me.
Just curious, how many people are in the World War III Illustrated Collective?
It depends on your definition of the collective. I mean, if you define it as the editorial board, we usually have about three or four. This issue we had actually five, which is a record, people editing. But then if you include all the contributors, there are 30 people, and over time there have probably been about 150. You know, it started out as me, Peter Cooper, and a conceptual artist named Christoph Kohlhofer, so two Jews and a German doing an anti-war book. And then it, you know, other people came along, and so different times it's been different people, but a lot of different artists came through there. You know, Peter Bagg started out at World War III. Most people would never think he had anything to do with us.
Who's that?
He's a humorous cartoonist who works out of Seattle, and actually he's politically fairly conservative, and he's also a gag guy, so a lot of people wouldn't associate his work with ours, but he did actually start out at World War III.
Hmm. Your work is mostly comics?
Yeah.
Is there a reason why this is?
Comics are the medium I'm most comfortable with, probably because I read them voraciously when I was a little kid, and I learned to draw them when I was a teenager. And, you know, of course, when I went to college, I wanted to do something more serious, and I tried to get into other things, and I found that I was enormously depressed. And
did you go through college?
I didn't finish college. Okay. I was a disastrous college student. I was a disastrous college student.
How many years did you go through?
I went through, I think, 6 years, but I did not come out with a degree because I started out as a film major.
Well, at least you.
And I went to NYU to be a film major because I was convinced there was no future in comics. And you have to remember that in the 1970s, there weren't a lot of adult comics being produced. So being in comics meant either being a superhero comic book artist, which I was tired of, or being involved in the underground comics, who actually also had a fairly limited range of subject material. It was basically, you want to do more comics about hippies and dope, you know? And they also didn't get paid very much. So there really wasn't any place to do it. And so I wanted to get into film, and I couldn't relate to the social hierarchies around film, the way that interacted with the college I was at, which people saw NYU as a stepping stone to the movie industry, so there are all kinds of creepy people,
careerists.
You know, with very superficial values, and it was very depressing for me, and I wound up dropping out of school, and at a point when I was fairly dark point in my life, where, you know, a lot of my friends were doing dope and, you know, getting in various types of trouble, you know, but I had, by going to school, managed to move to New York, which was a much more interesting place to get into trouble than Cleveland, for sure. My best friend from first grade, Peter Cooper, came to New York, and he says, well, I'm going to do what we always wanted to do. I'm going to do comics. And I was like, you can do comics? And then I saw he was actually selling them and doing all right with them. And I was like, wow, yeah, I could do this. I remember I like doing this. And I actually did take some part-time study at Pratt Institute for Art. And I couldn't put the credits together. And I finally just threw up my hands and said, I'm just going to go out and make a living at this, which, of course, terrified my family. And then I did go out and make a living at it. And now I teach at a college for whatever. I teach at School of Visual Arts for cartooning.
Oh, really?
But, you know, I didn't finish college. And it, in a lot of ways, I found going back to doing comics, while I can never go back to, you know, reading a story about guys flying through the air where I really identify with it and believe in it, because I see all the devices and I see how affected it is, you know. Nonetheless, it's this very familiar, comfortable way of expressing things, that I can express things very well in comics that I might have more trouble writing about or doing a simple painting about. So I'm worked from that point. And I do feel that, you know, a number of us have struggled to make comic books into a real art form. I mean, it always was a real art form, but struggled to bring it back to being a real art form and take it away from just being limited to juvenile subject material.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Beehive Collective?
Oh, yeah, they're great. Love the Beehive Collective. I first encountered the work of the Beehive Collective in flyers and banners, and I thought it was just great that somebody put that much work into a political piece of political propaganda, and they'd put that much refined, controlled work. I don't work in the same way that they do, first because they don't draw the human form.
Yes.
And I love to draw the human form, although I do like drawing animals also. Second, because they choose to have everyone who works be anonymous, which is kind of a beautiful image in a way, but the collective I have, if I were to go to Eric Drucker, Sabrina Jones, Paula Hewitt, Peter Cooper, and say, hey, I want you to work on this magazine and none of you are going to have your names on it, I'd be hanging from the lamppost. You know, so it's just not my reality. But I respect what they do a great deal. I think the Beehive Collective is very important, and I think they're having a big influence.
It just reminded me, because When you were describing your approach for doing research for your comics, it made me think of the Beehive Collective because I think that you have something in common. What I think you have in common with the Beehive Collective is this desire to be directly involved with the political struggle of your artwork, because they also do some on-the-ground research.
Well, then that's something we have in common.
Mm-hmm. I've read a bit about your squatting days earlier on in your life.